Wait, are we starting?
Yeah, we're starting. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Deadline City. We are your hosts, Zoraida Cordova
and Danielle Clayton.
And welcome to our first ever podcast recording.
And the shenanigans. Because it's just going to be a whole bunch of mess.
Yeah. Hopefully. If you have ever watched us on a panel, you know exactly what this is about.
It's about us talking shit and wading through the trenches of being a career
authors. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what Deadline City is, why we even started this podcast. Why are you listening to us? Why should you listen to us? Nobody listens to me.
But. Well, you should listen because we're awesome. And I feel like there aren't that many podcasts that deal with sort of what it means to be a working writer in the trenches, in the middle or at the start of their career. It's always like debut, how to start, how to get into the into publishing.
Right.
What happens once you're in here? And there's a whole lot of mess.
Yes, welcome to Deadline City.
Yes. Stressful.
So who are you, Danielle? Tell me. Pretend I'm your therapist.
I am a resident troll. I am the troll of Deadline City. Small and angry. And yeah, so I grew up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. And I was just a reader, a bookworm, a big nerd. Went to the library, would hoard books under my grandmother's table, and I really wanted to be a doctor, but then I failed chemistry in college, and my parents were
Definitely would not want you tinkering around on my insides.
No, because I would be leaving things behind, and I would be stressed, and I don't like it. So
you'd be like, where's my stethoscope? I think it's in, I don't know, her rib cage.
Exactly. No one should trust me to be their doctor. But so I was like, okay, I'll just be a teacher or a librarian, and I'll just tell children what to read and be a book bully.
And tinker in their minds.
Yes, and grow the minds. And so I did do that for a long time, but then I got my master's in children's literature. Clearly I'm overly educated. It's ridiculous. Still paying those school loans. And I thought, okay.
Yay, crippling debt.
Yeah, Sally Mae. She won't leave me alone. I thought, why are children's books so pervasively white? Why are they missing so many children? And so that's how I got in. I was forced to take a creative writing class. It was awful. My work was awful. And then I just kept reading and working on my craft, and I got better. And I thought, this is a way for me to change the industry by writing the books I wanted to see. What about you?
I started writing when I was 13. If you've heard me speak before, you know this story.
The one-shot train story?
We're not telling that story today.
please request that story.
Do not request that story.
You want to hear this
story.
So,
when I was 13, I knew I wanted to be a writer. I found a book by multiple things happened basically in my life. I read a vampire book by a girl who was 13 years old.
Of course.
I read Tithe by Holly Black.
The queen,
the fairy queen. And reading Tithe solidified in my mind that it was possible to write about the urban and the fantastical at the same time. And I had never seen that before because my library, I'm from Jamaica, Queens.
Killer Queens.
Yes, represent. being able to have that book really changed my outlook of what fiction was. My library didn't have a lot of things. It mostly stocked, like, the classics and things like that. And so the quote-unquote juvenile section.
Hate that name. Someone wants to be caught dead in the juvenile section.
Exactly.
Folks.
So, like, that section didn't really have. It had, like, you know, Esperanza Rising, which is a beautiful book. It's gorgeous. You know, Pam Munoz is absolutely fantastic writer. But I wanted I wanted magic.
And you so didn't then, want the sad
immigrant I didn't want the sad immigrant story. And I wanted to see myself as a hero, you know, the shows that I watched, Buffy, Charmed. I was never in those shows. And so when I started writing, I still didn't write myself into fiction. I wrote about mostly white kids.
I wonder why, because I was doing thinly veiled autobiographies in fantastical worlds. So I was like, this is me. I'm an orc. I'm a, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Elf. I don't know. I'm that.
Well, also, like, Latino media and soap operas are very, very white anyway. Yeah. But reading this vampire book, I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to write a witch story. So I wrote a witch story. It was awful.
Hopefully we'll be able to read some of these awful works.
We will. On one day, you know, if readers request our juvenilia, we can read them. Do so at your own peril.
Right.
But after that, I went to writing camp, and I got to learn from, like, the masters, like Jacqueline Woodson and Norma Fox Mazer, RIP. And that's how I learned how to be a professional writer, because at the end of the workshop, there was, like, a day where some of the mentors, like Anne Angel, who writes YA nonfiction, she gave us, like, a crash course on, like, the publishing side of all of this stuff. And I was 16, 17, and so I had a very early, I had a very early education to publishing.
And so you wanted to join this weird business?
Absolutely, because Anne Angel gave me, she introduced me to Writer's Digest. So I made my mom buy me, obviously, the outdated by a year because it's cheaper, big fat tome of Writer's Digest back when you had to look for agents on paper and not on, like, agentquery.com. All, like, writers coming up now, like, the information is overwhelming.
Right.
But when I started, I remember sending my first query letters via email and snail mail.
That's hilarious.
When I was 17.
So early.
Yeah.
And I've never even thought about it. I was such an avid reader, loving books, but I never thought that I could be part of making books.
That's crazy. So I think, and for you, the realization was going to school. For me, it was being 13 and saying, I want to be a writer, I can't change my mind now.
Right, and you were like, you dug your heels, and I can imagine little stubborn Zoretta being like, this is what I'm going to do forever! I'm going to be a writer!
I mean, I did...
Any regrets?
Sometimes. There are definitely times where I've thought to myself, like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. It's no longer fun. Or I think that I'm not doing as well as somebody else, so I'm failing.
Right.
And those moments are particularly hard.
And especially when we're in the vortex of deadlines. And that's why I think we wanted to start this podcast, because I wasn't finding the resources that I needed for what do I do now? Mm-hmm. I've got several books out. I've got to manage all of these deadlines. I'm always in the vortex of doom, it feels like. And sometimes I lose my love of the actual craft.
Yeah.
And so I thought, let's sort of talk out all of those things and go into the dark corners and deal with the wrinkles and warts of the writing process and being on deadline and being in this weird business.
Right.
Where nothing feels secure.
Nothing feels secure, and it's also not a business that runs on data.
It's like feelings.
I think that, and the data is there. There are numbers there. And somehow, people can still look at data and not be able to produce or reproduce something.
Right.
Right? Like, what makes a bestseller? How do you calculate how much of an advance somebody should get?
Right. And it all feels arbitrary.
Yeah.
And it feels like we're throwing things against the wall. And I feel like this would be a good place to get some of that angst out, too. To talk about, like, why the madness? Why the madness? Because none of it makes sense to me. My brain is overly logical, and I'm like, why?
Right. I think I'm 7, year 7 of my publishing career.
You're way ahead of me.
And I don't have answers. I think I have, like, I have clues, maybe. I think that...
Then tell me how it works! Teach everyone!
Maybe
fix it!
Maybe this podcast will help us fix it together.
World domination.
Or you know, or get just close to you know, if not finding the answer, then at least a good enough explanation.
Right, and I think I just need to be able to talk out, like, my fears, grievances. Talk out my grievances, what I don't understand, and sort of how to keep the love of the word and the stories and the page in the midst of the deadlines, in
right.
the midst of all of the chaos. It always feels like there's a storm, or the storm is coming. You have one book that comes out, and then it's like, huh, I did it. Uh-oh. Back on the hamster wheel. Here comes the storm again. And it's an interesting place to be.
Hurricane a-coming.
Yes. Hurricane, deadline hurricane, book hurricanes. I always feel like I'm in the middle of chaos. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to make sense of
yeah,
of
and I think
to talk it out.
So some of the things that you can expect going forward is going to be... we're going to have some special guests, but most of the episodes will be just Danielle and myself. We're going to talk about missing deadlines, nano, money.
Writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
How people can write across lots of different genres, how we manage our goals, how we break things down for revision, how we create worlds. We're going to really get into the nitty-gritty of the things that help us make our books and where we fail or where we exceed.
So now what I want to talk about is our paths to publication, right?
Yeah.
So for me, I sent my first query letter when I was a teenager. That didn't work out.
Surprise!
I sent out my full manuscript in the mail, but I didn't include my return address
Aww.
Or my like cover letter. So I just
but you were a teen.
I know, and
Lisa
it was like
Raya.
You know, and everything worked out. But you know, that's a mistake that like it's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What was that book?
It was called Magdalena.
I love Magdalena.
And it was about a Puritan witch in the year 1687 or something like that.
So a little bit like the Latinx version of the Witch of Blackbird Pond?
But it wasn't Latinx.
But her name was Magdalena.
I know, because her mom had like an Irish Catholic midwife and named it after her.
Oh, boy. Is just getting worse and worse.
This is very historically not accurate.
Oh, God. Okay. So a white witch named Magdalena.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Magdalena.
Continue.
So ignore that. I interned very briefly at a literary agency in New York. And from there, the agent... the junior agent was starting to take on her client list, so she signed me up, and she encouraged me to finish my book, and I finished a book, and that book was called Rebel Rebel. It is about it was a quinceañera novel.
Ooh.
And during that year, there were 17,000 quinceañera novels. Honestly, there were probably like four. But, you know...
But you couldn't have too many.
You couldn't have too many. You couldn't have two at one publisher, but you could have 17, 16, 16 books. You know, I'm not bitter.
Not at all. Not even a little bit.
And I honestly am grateful that that book didn't sell, because I would be a different writer. My debut would have been contemporary.
Which is wild.
Mm-hmm.
Wild.
So I didn't write for another year. I literally thought my life career was over. Mm-hmm. I was in Montana at the time. I was going to school over there, and you know, I had a phone call with like the editor at a publisher, and we got really close. But at the end, you know, that was my first real rejection. And getting rejected when you're 18 years old is hard. I mean, getting rejected at any point in your life is hard. But for that moment, for me, it was like devastating.
But you got back on the horse, which is amazing, because I don't know if my 18-year-old self would have continued the way that you did. You were like stubborn determination.
Right. And so a year later, I wrote the first half of what would become The Vicious Deep.
Oh.
And I was at a bookstore with my friend T.S. Ferguson, who's an editor.
Woohoo!
He's the best. And we were browsing through bookstores, and I saw some mermaid books, and I was like, you know, I don't want to read any of these. Like, these are like, they're fun, but like, I haven't seen the kind of mermaid book that I want to read. Like,
and you're a specific, true mermaid listener.
I am.
She's the mermaid.
And he was like, so why don't you just write it? And I was like,
sounds like T.S.
You know, yeah, like multiple, you know, light bulbs going off at the same time in my head. Like, I was like, well, why don't I just write it? And sometimes you just need that person to push you and to say, like,
to challenge you, to say, let's go.
Be your, like, fucking Master Yoda. That's do or right. do not. There is no try.
Yes. Oh, a Star Wars. Here it is.
Uh-huh. And so I had The Vicious Deep. Mm-hmm. It went to Sourcebooks. It was my first book deal. It was originally in paperback, but because there were so many mermaid books coming out that summer, Barnes & Noble was like, if you change the cover and make it more action and less paranormal romance, you know, it was not paranormal romance, but that's another thing we can talk about another day. They say if you give it an action cover and make it hardcover, we'll buy more copies.
Okay.
So Barnes & Noble is the reason I went from paperback to hardcover, because 7 years ago, people were still buying trade paperback books.
Yes.
And the, you know, it was, I honestly do think that that's better for some books that should just come out straight to paperback. But then I had the Vicious Deep trilogy. But in 2014, I was like, my career isn't really moving. You know, my publisher is not investing in my series. And there was a wave of new adult books. So my editor, my agent.
The dreaded new adult label,
which nobody knows how to define it anymore.
Because nobody calls themselves a new adult. When I'm in college, I'm like, I'm a new adult. No, they don't call themselves that. So it didn't really.
Right. It's not a thing. It's not a thing. And there's no place for it in the bookstore. It's definitely a place that I write from, because I was writing these books in my early 20s, and my characters were in their early 20s, and new adult was supposed to be that in-between space that women have in the market,
right,
that nobody was writing for. But you had people like Jennifer Armentrout and Jay Crownover and Cora Carmack writing to that space. So my agent challenged me to write a romance novel. And so we went to my local bar with my two friends.
Oh boy.
Natalie and Sarah.
Who are the best?
Or maybe Natalie Sarah wasn't there. It doesn't matter.
This is how this series came about.
Yeah,
this
we went to the bar. And I was like, I want to write a novel that is essentially the plot to Lucky by Britney Spears, the song Lucky.
I'm over it. Are you kidding me?
No!
That's how it happened?
This is a story about a girl named Lucky.
Oh, my insides are dying.
So it changed. Like, she was no longer a star. You know, she's so lucky. She's a star. She was not a star. She was a girl who was very much lost, like, couldn't keep a job, was, like, 24 and angry at the world. And it turned into, like, a sexy chef romance.
She's on the struggle bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she falls in love with this, like, hot chef from Boston who is has a dark past or whatever.
Of course he does.
And he's brooding. And wonderful. And
you just have to love him.
Mm-hmm.
Help him.
Yep. So that was the first time that I wrote two books in 1 year.
You survived.
I survived. That was that first
time. You've written more now.
I know. So then I wrote the two sequels, but in 2016 I did the same thing. I wrote two more books in the same year, and that was Life on the Level, and which is a romance, and then Labyrinth Lost. And Labyrinth Lost was a book for me where my publisher didn't really want to buy it. They were like, well, we'll take one more book because you haven't done very well so far.
They said that?
That was the language. You know, it was like, well, we only want one book. Because I pitched the series.
Right.
But they were like, well,
three.
Right. And they said, well, because of the performance of the last book, last series, we only want one more book.
We're going to have to talk about that on an episode.
Right.
Expectations.
And so, you know, my poor book, my poor little Incantrix, because that was the original title.
It was called Incantrix.
Yeah. And so I sold that one. But those books have been coming out every 2 years. You know, mm-hmm. So book two came out in 2018. Book three is going to come out in 2020. And I think that was the beginning of my burnout. And the time where I started taking on work, because I was working at a nightclub. And I'd been working at a nightclub for 10 years up until 2017. And then one day, like, the owner yelled at me and I quit.
Right.
So
I
was like,
I quit.
Crap, now what do I do? I have to
get all these contracts.
I have to finish the contracts that I have, but I can't have another job while I do it. And I'm very fortunate in the fact that, like, I have cheap rent and also I don't have kids or a mortgage. Right. So I had saved up money because that's what I was taught to do.
Right.
So I had money saved up for, like, about a year. And I, you know, right after Labyrinth Lost, I was still ready to quit because I was like, nothing is happening. I didn't have an honest conversation with myself about what I wanted to happen.
Right. And sort of figuring out if I could design my career, mm-hmm. what would that look like? Because then we have money concerns, right? It's like, okay, well, let me gobble up these things because I need to pay these bills. But if I could design my career, right. what that would look like.
And so it becomes this thing where I was living paycheck to paycheck with advances, mm-hmm. right? As soon as I turn this in, then I'll get a certain payment, because when you're writing, you get paid on when you sign, when you deliver the book, and if the advance is very big, which you get when you publish the book. I think 2018 is the year where I wrote 5 books.
That's
in a year.
Yeah,
I wrote the third Brooklyn Bruja book. I almost said the title. I wrote The Way to Rio Luna, my middle grade. I wrote Incendiary.
Your next YA fantasy.
My next YA fantasy series, which actually I've rewrote that book like 3 times. I wrote Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, A Crash of Fate. I wrote Stripped, Hired. That's more than 5 books. I'm self-counting. And then I launched a pen name.
Right.
Because I didn't have enough work.
Right, exactly. And you just kept going. And your strip series is based on a fairy tale, correct?
The greatest fairy tale ever told, Magic Mike, XXL.
I love it. I love it so much. and you're basically exhausted.
I am tired.
Right.
But you have a list of a lot of books.
Yes. But my process was different. But when I first moved to New York, I was working for a literary agent. And
so we both what started the agent route.
Exactly.
So I think that that's really smart because you learn how the sausage is made.
The sausage, yes. I saw the sausage in all the fillings and the casing.
And you're like, I still want to eat this.
I still want to eat this and I want to make my own damn sausage. So basically I moved to New York.
Gross.
I was getting an MFA in writing for children at the New School, and I met a very chatty woman named Sona Charapatra. Oh. And she's very small and chatty. And we would go for coffee and cake all the time. And we would complain about sort of the books that we saw growing up and sort of what was going on in our workshop and how we felt like people didn't understand how we were organically trying to show diversity in our work. She also was going to go interview at a company called Alloy Entertainment. They're responsible for a ton of great books.
Vampire Diaries!
Yes! Gossip Girl, Pretty Little Liars,
Seafire by Natalie C. Parker.
Yes. Everything. And they just have a great, you know, the great model. And we didn't realize that, you can package books. And we thought, look, in order to radically change the publishing industry, let's start packaging some books together where we show how you can have organic diversity in a story that's not boiled down to just that. It's just a story about a girl or a boy or whoever doing whatever shenanigans, right? So I used to work at a ballet boarding school. It was my first job out of college. I accidentally got the job. I was going to be a resident advisor because it was a boarding school, but the English teacher got fired on the first day of training and for using an inappropriate term, and because it was a very conservative school. And so they asked me, because I had a BA in English, can you teach until we find a replacement? And so I did, but they just never found a replacement. And I thought, okay, this is cool. And I told Sona about that, and she was like, do you watch Pretty Little Liars? And I was like, I haven't really started that. Started watching that show, and then, boom, the two ideas came together. And we were like, okay, why don't we write a book together to launch our packaging company and show people, here's what we mean. It is like Pretty Little Liars, set in a ballet boarding school where 3 girls are willing to do whatever it takes to be the best. And it's just a story about ballet, but it has several different characters from several different backgrounds, and those backgrounds influence how they move through the ballet world. But it's not about, oh, I'm sad and brown, right? So we were trying to, and those books are important too, but we were trying to do something a little different.
Sad and brown.
So we wrote Tiny Pretty Things and Shiny Broken Pieces together, and they launched in 2015 and 2016 as a way to sort of say, hey, this is what we're doing. And then we started rolling and packaging and putting together lots of different books. Then we launched a book called The Gauntlet, and it is basically an inverted Jumanji, where three kids get sucked into a board game and have to work their way out. Then we did Love Sugar Magic, which is like practical magic for middle grade, and so on and so forth. And so in the midst of that, I was also writing my own books, which is the Bell series, but I wanted to make sure that we continue to show the publishing industry all the different kinds of stories that are available that feature all different kinds of kids. And while I was launching my company, I had like four jobs. I was a librarian, a middle school and upper elementary school librarian in East Harlem for several years. And I was tutoring. I tutored for a decade all these children on the Upper East Side, helping them do their homework and teaching them how to study and write. And so I was doing all of those things. My day would be from 8 a.m. to 3 would be at the library. Then from 3 to 9 or 10 would be tutoring. And then I would write from 10 until 2 in the morning. Because I wanted it so badly, I wanted to launch this thing so badly that I was willing to work around the clock. But now that I've gotten fortunate that the company is taking off, we have lots of different books, and I got a lot of deadlines. I quit my teaching job, and now I can solely focus on working with Sona to package amazing books and give writers opportunities to launch, and then also working on my own books that work in sort of tandem with that.
Do you want to name all of your books?
No.
I think you should name them.
Oh, God. Well, we have the Love Sugar Magic series. The Gauntlet also has a companion called The Battle. Mm-hmm. The Trouble with Shooting Stars. Symptoms of a Heartbreak. We have Tristan Strong Punches a Hole in the Sky. And that Can't is wait a for trilogy. That. And then, of course, I have my Bell series. And Sona and I have a book coming out next year called The Rumor Game. And I have a book called A Match Made in Mindy. And there's a lot of other books that I cannot talk about yet.
Not even to our special listeners.
No, no. Not yet. But, and we should talk about how we met.
Yeah.
It's a cute little story. Yeah. Our little meet cute.
Yeah, so it was RT Kansas.
No.
Are you sure?
Dallas. No.
It was Kansas.
No. Kansas?
I'm pretty sure.
RT went to Kansas? No.
Yeah, it did. I went to Kansas City.
I don't remember. I just know that I was hiding.
There was like a YA party, the YA slumber party. RT is a conference that happened every year. It no longer happens. I made most of my friends at RT.
Romantic times.
The romantic times. And I just... There was just this small girl. And Sona, you and Sona were hiding near a chair, like, yes, by a table. And
I was like, we didn't know what was happening. It was a very weird thing. Everyone was in their pajamas. And yeah. There were these men, too, outside the door.
It was the guests. Like, oh, right, because Romantic Times had all the male models walking around.
Little Fabios walking around everywhere. And I was scared. They didn't have their clothes on.
I know. They had pants on, just but no shirts.
No shirts. And the women were going crazy, and some of them had hair down to their buns. So it was...
There's a one guy, that yeah, one guy. Yeah.
It was intense. I was scared. It was my first time.
And I just, like, went like, hello. Hello there.
What you don't realize is that Zoretta Cordova is, like, the friendliest person in Friendtown. Like, she is the one. Like, I'm the grumpy face, and she's like, hello! But then when we get in an Uber, she doesn't want to talk to the drivers, and then I'm the one that's talking. So it's just like this weird thing.
I do. I contain multitudes.
Multitudes, yes. Universes within my soul. Yeah. So yeah, and you came over and said hi, and we were like, oh, there is another
person brown person, color. Right? Yeah, because it was one of those things where like there were 80 writers, and it was like me, you, and Sona.
Right, as the only browns. The Browns in White Town.
Right, in White, and you know, it's gotten better. Oh, well, White, Archie doesn't exist anymore, but
right.
Conventions have gotten better, I should say.
Right.
But that was yeah, that was how we became friends, and then I invited Danielle to Puerto Rico,
And it was over.
And it was over. I collected her. Yes. Or she, you know, you collected me. I don't know.
I'm a collector. You make eye contact with me, and we became friends. I'm like, I like this girl. She's fun. And now we are fully into our shenanigans.
And now we're here. And so, you know, I think that we have a lot that we want to share with people. There's so much that we've learned the hard way, and hopefully we will be able to inspire others to avoid some of the pitfalls that we have gone through. And if you don't, because deadlines are hard, at least you'll know that there's somebody going through the same thing beside you.
Right. And we just want to be honest. We want to tell you the truth about the process and demystify a lot of it, especially for those of us who have, you know, one or two books out, and it's like, whoa, it's not so shiny anymore.
Right, what
now,
do I do?
What do I do now? And so that's what we want to do, and just really pull the veil back and say, hey, things might look a certain way online, everybody looks like they're having a good time, and we are, but here's all of the warts,
right, the moles. Here's what is not curated on my Instagram feed.
Exactly. Here's the real deal. And so I'm excited. We'll take questions and we'll do a bunch of fun things and try to get into the nitty-gritty about all of the topics that I think really have affected us and our careers and dealing with these books and staying sane in the process.
Absolutely.
So welcome to Deadline City.